Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
How do you look back on your time at Spurs?
The first and the third years I was there, as in my ability to play, were the best years of my life. At the end of that third year, I tore a meniscus in my knee. I ended up having four operations, I think, in about 12 months, and my career was over. I didn't realise it at the time. It was the thing that killed me. I was never the same after that.
Hello and welcome to The Last Word on Spurs. Hope you're all keeping well as we continue to fight and battle the coronavirus. And as again, we try and bring you another ex-Spurs player to reflect on his time at the club. Delighted to have alongside me for this one, Jason McGovern. Jace, how you keeping?
Not too bad. Like again, it's good to talk about the old times. So looking forward to the next hour or so, mate.
Yes, and pleased to have another, as we say, former Spurs player on. A player that made 124 appearances between 1992 to 1998. One of the important members in our backline of the mid-90s. Delighted to have on the show, Dean Onstin joins us. Dean, how you keeping? How are you?
Hi, Rick. Hi, Jace. Keeping well, thanks. Keeping well?
Yep, not bad at all. Thanks, Dean. Pleasure to have you on. We get a chance to reflect back with you on your time at Spurs and obviously what you're doing now, and a bit of escapism and light relief for some supporters, I think, for the last couple of, say, last 6-12 months talking about the current team. It's nice to actually have a break away from that and take some time out to interview some ex-players and just see what they're up to nowadays and talk about their time at the club. And Dean, I suppose we'll start with the fact that your early days started out 12 years old at Watford, but the career path just wasn't an easy one for you, was it, at the time?
No, I don't think it has been across, to be fair. I think through the start of my football career was, it was very enjoyable. Like, I've got to say, I enjoyed every minute of it. It wasn't an easy path. I had a lot of rejection. I had to show a lot of resilience, but I think that's very, very important. I'm a great believer that I don't think you learn from things going right all the time. I think that you have to do things wrong, you have to make mistakes, and you know, sometimes you have to be patient to be a winner. And I feel exactly the same in my sort of 16, 17 years that I've been doing as a coach come manager as well.
Dean, interestingly, you were at the time, David Webb paid £14,000 to take you to Southend. How did that finally feel to become a professional footballer at that age?
I was very cautious about making the jump at the time. I got released from Watford when I was 18. I went back there between the age of 12. I got released when I was 14. I went to different clubs and was rejected, etc., etc. And then I went back to Watford when I was 16, 17. Tom Whalley took me back there. And I then got released, went to St Albans and had a really uplifting experience. You know, 18 years old, I was playing in men's football, doing really well. And there was a lot of clubs that were looking at me at that time. Southend were the ones that came in and put their money where their mouth was. But I actually was a bit sceptical about making the jump, purely because of finances, to be fair. It was an hour's journey from my of my home in Hemel Hempstead at the time, and I was earning, I was a ceramic tiler working for the council, and I was earning all right money there, and I was earning half decent money at St Albans, and the money that I was earning with them two jobs was more money than what Southend were prepared to pay me. So I was a little bit sceptical, but I think I was a month before my 20th birthday when I was at Southend, or went to Southend, and I just thought, right, I'm not even 20 yet. I'm just coming up 20. They're going to give me a year and a bit's contract. I haven't got anything to lose. I'm going to go for this. I'm young enough. I'm not going to worry about the money. I'm going for the opportunity. And hopefully the opportunity, I can end up making a living. I can end up making a living out of this. And if I don't, then, well, I can always go back. There was loads of non-league clubs that wanted me at the time. And the non-league scene at the time was paying quite good money. And my bosses have said that I could go back and there would be a job there for me if it didn't work out. So it was a no-brainer in the end, really.
And you joined Southend the season just after the Tottenham had played them in the League Cup over two legs. And people can remember that. That was an incredibly tight cup tie, retirement and that for Tottenham to go through. But in your time at Southend, you did pretty well there with back-to-back promotions from the fourth to the third and the third to the second. And then on Boxing Day in that second division, you were actually top of the league and chasing an astonishing third successive promotion.
Yeah, we had, I think that, you're right, Jason, it was incredible. It was a great time. We was incredibly successful. I went in and that time we were hovering around the automatic places, sort of in the playoffs, but hovering around the automatic places. I went in, I remember about the first 2-3 weeks, never played. I was playing in reserve games. David Wett, but we got to, it was about this time actually. It'd be interesting to know what the date was. It'd be round about now. We was playing, the team had got beat on the Saturday 4-0 to Maidstone with a very experienced team. And David Webb had signed about six, seven players, all on deadline day, but we were all under 21. And the team got beat by Maidstone, and we was playing away to Burnley on the Tuesday night. And he just wielded the axe. He chopped all the big players, all the older players, and put us young boys in. I was 19. I remember Paul Smith was 17. Andy Anson was like 20, 21. It was, we went to Burnley. Burnley were a big team then in the old fourth division. 12,000 fans there was there on that day. It was like quite nervous for me as a young lad making my league debut like that. We were down to 10 men off within the first 15 minutes and we drew 0-0. And from there, the team just kicked on. And then at the end of the season, Dave Webb decided to... He released the majority of the older players, to be fair. Quite a few he let go. And a bunch of young players brought in, and Brett Angel, Chrissy Powell, and these boys. And we had an unbelievable bond. And I think that it's something that I always... To be able to create that type of spirit at a football club again would be marvellous. Be very, very difficult because the game's changed so much. But we had a camaraderie like I've never seen in a dressing room before. There was no egos, but we scrapped and we fought for everything. And the next year, so we went into League One, obviously, went up into League One as it is, but Division Three then. and everyone was tipping us to go down, and we went the first 12 games unbeaten of the season. We were top of the league and we were winning it easy. And again, we had a great season again. I mean, we was up with 3 games to go. We played away to Bury, third last game of the season, won away to Bury 1-0. And that was it. And then the following year, really, again, everyone was tipping us, sort of, we're in the championship. Everyone was tipping us to go down again. Same group of players, 1 or 2 signings, but nothing much, but it never disrupted the dressing room. I remember we signed Keith Jones from Brentford. And again, we absolutely flew. We were flying until Christmas, and then there was a falling out between David Webb and the owner, or the chairman at the time, Vic Jobson. David wanted to... We were his boys. I mean, and we were earning buttons. Talking about today's game, we were earning buttons, and he wanted us looked after, and the chairman wasn't prepared to do it. So David Webb took his chances because he'd got successive promotions on his CV as well, and just went, right, okay, I'm off end of the season. I'm gone. I've got to go to the end of the season. And from that moment, really, I'm not going to say the wheels come off, but I think we took our eye off the ball a little bit. A lot of us were out of contract in the summer. And I just think that we just took our eye off the ball a little bit. I'm not saying intentionally, and we didn't, because we were too good a group of lads, you know. But it was a very, very special time.
Interestingly, Dean, at the time, you know, during that season, I think you turned down a move to Derby, and at the end of that season, yeah, Spurs came in for you, and you were actually a Spurs supporter, ironically, as a kid. So when did you first go to White Hart Lane, and who were your Spurs heroes back then in that era?
Whoa, first game, White Hart Lane. It was, I believe... You have to remind me of the year. Actually, White Hart Lane, I think it was the game when Glenn Hoddle left Peter Ucker on his backside when he danced through the whole team type thing and went through and done the step over and left Peter Ucker. I think it was Peter Ucker on the floor and he just rolled it in the net.
I think that's Oxford in what, 87 season, wasn't it? When Glenn
I would have thought, yeah, when I went earlier than that, I think I was about 13. So I don't know what game it was, but my dad's friend had 2 season tickets in the East Stand on the front row above the shelf. And my idols, to be fair, was Ozzy Ardiles and Glenn Hoddle.
A lot of people, they dream of playing for the club they support. Tell us, how did that actual move come about at the time? And what was that feeling like signing for Spurs, for you being a fan of your boyhood club?
Well, I had a lot of interest in that year. To be fair, David Webb was like a father figure to me and was very good to me. And in that year, I actually had Blackburn and Derby who were trying to sign me. Derby put the hard cash down. Chairman was desperate for money, called me in just before the deadline and said to me, look, we've had this offer for you. I think this would be a good move for you. I think you should go. And I sort of said, right, okay, well, I need to have a think about it. So, of course, I went home. I spoke to my dad about it. But then the following day, I waited for David Webb before training and said, boss, can I have a minute, please? And I went in and spoke to him and sort of said to him, look, this is what the chairman's put forward. Actually had a clause in my contract. I could have made some substantial money out of that deal if I'd gone at the time. The money, he basically said to me, depends what you want to do, son. He said, if you want to play in the championship, then yeah, go Derby. If you back yourself, and I think you should back yourself, I think you could be a Premier League player next year. So I was very quiet, very shy lad at that time. Very humble, just wanted to play football. I wasn't motivated by money. It was really coming up to the point. I had no time. and it was about I had to make a decision. I had to make a decision quick because of the deadline. And I just wasn't, in the end, I just said to the chairman, I said, I'm just not prepared to make this decision. That's going to affect me for the next 4 years of my life. I'm not prepared to make that decision inside 24 hours. I want to see this through. We were still about seventh at the time. It was an outside chance. We could still get in the playoffs and what have you. So I just said, no, I'm gonna stick here. I'm going to see it through. And then come what may in the summer.
When you signed for Tottenham, Peter Shreve had just been sacked. So the managerial team was officially Terry Livermore. But who was it you sat down and talked about the club with?
Terry was the one. Terry's been a major influence on my career, both as a player and as a coach. But he was the one who I sat down with, contacted me right towards the end of the season and sort of said he'd like the opportunity to have a sit down with me. I never had an agent, although I was getting pestered by agents at that time. I went with my dad. I sat down with Terry, and Terry told me about what he was looking to do and what he was looking to do with the team, how he was looking to build the team over the next two, three years. Thought that I could be an integral part of that. Spoke about my game. Spoke about where he felt that I could make some improvements. He asked me what kind of packages I'd been offered. I told him honestly what I'd been offered, which he said to me, "Well, I won't be able to get anywhere near that sum. But this is what I can give you." I probably signed for half the money that I was offered from other clubs.
And you followed the same route from Southend as Justin Edinburgh. Did that make your entry to Tottenham easier? Was Justin quickly a teammate, you know, the, your type of thing? And what was Justin like as a person?
Yeah, he was a good lad, very loud, funny. I met Justin a few times. He used to come back to Southend and watch games when we was playing on a Tuesday evening or whatever.
Did you ever play in the same team at Southend?
Yeah, we did. We played the last six games on the first promotion.
Right.
Justin returned to Southend from his loan at Spurs. Spurs give him back to Southend to help Southend try and get promoted. So, yeah, we played in the last six games together. But it was already agreed that obviously he was going to Spurs. But you could tell, I mean, you could tell he was a good player. He was a really good lad, confident, you know, good fun to be around, laugh a minute. And so I think it was easier for me to actually go and step in that dressing room and know someone rather than not know anyone, you know.
Dean, Hearts away, 2-1 win in a friendly. That was your first ever appearance for the club, coming on as a sub. What was that feeling like to wear that shirt for the first time as a Spurs player when you have then made your full debut for the club?
I was really, really nervous. To be honest with you, the great Ray Clements pulled me in the end and had a word with me. Don't get me wrong, I worked my socks off in pre-season, but I was a bit nervous. Young boy, come from Southend United, you've come to this massive club. When I walked through the gates on the first day, Bill Nick was there to greet me. Things were just done properly. They were just nice touches, you know what I mean? So I remember having a good chat with Bill Nick, and Bill Nick said to me about how many times he'd been sent by Terry to watch me play, by Terry and Ted Buxton, and, you know, he really liked me and gave good reports on me and told me to enjoy it and what a great club it was. And I think walking into the club, and I had done a little bit of a physical medical on the side of the pitch, and just walking out into the stadium was like, whew, you know, I remember I should sit up there. So quite a surreal moment. That I think pre-season, I found it very difficult. I found it was very much a do I belong here? And I didn't have a great pre-season. I worked very hard physically, but I didn't have a great pre-season in terms of the games. And I didn't, obviously, never started the season. I was on the bench the first game. But about 2 weeks before the season started, they sent me to play in a reserve game at Charlton. And Ray Clements pulled me the day before and said, look, we've got a game here, but, you know, we want you to go and get full 90 and go playing this game. But I want to say something to you. And I said, right. He says, you're here on merit, young man. So stop feeling nervous and about the situation. Look, okay, it's a bit daunting. It's a bigger club and this, that and the other. But it's still football, Dino. Trust yourself. The club have invested the money in you because they believe in you. And you've got to start showing that you are the player that we know you are. And I think those words really just settled me down, really. And then I had a real good couple of weeks. And then obviously I was on the bench for the first game. And then I weren't on the bench for the second game. So I played again in the reserve game. And then I was on the bench again for the Crystal Palace game. And I come on and made the second goal. And I think that really settled me down then. And I never in any point in my Spurs career felt, I've got it made here. I'm settled and I've got it. Every day was pressure for me. I had to be at my very best. I was on the seat of my pants every day playing with these players. Is how I felt. And it was the only way. And because I think that, obviously, when you get an opportunity to play for the club that you've supported as a kid, I think that then it just, that anything that you do achieve just tastes that much sweeter, I suppose.
Can you remember who played that day, Dean?
In what game? In the Crystal Palace game?
Yep.
Eric?
Yep.
Terry Fenwick?
Yep.
Jason Cundy, Razor, Justin, I believe.
Cundy didn't play.
Sorry?
Cundy didn't play against.
Well, that's been Maps in.
I tell the team: Toolsfit, Fenwick, Edinburgh, yeah. Edgley, David Tuttle, Dylan Rowe, John Hendry, Gordon Jury, Vinnie Samways, Darren Anderton, and Paul Allen. And you came on along with Phil Gray.
I think I'd have got probably 8 of those.
Interestingly, Dean, we'd lost Inaka and Paul Stewart that summer, which left Gordon Drury as our only real striker at the club. How obvious was it for you that we needed another body? And just how quickly did Teddy settle? And what difference did it make bringing in Teddy to that dressing room and how he fitted into the club?
Obviously, there was a lot of talk going on at that time that Terry, like that Ted was going to be coming. They was haggling over the bits of money, etc., etc. Razor knew him well, obviously playing with him at Millwall, said he was a great lad, and to be fair, he was. He's a great character, Ted, and obviously he showed himself to be a top striker as well.
Was Teddy the best player you played with at Tottenham?
Teddy,
yeah,
no.
So who was Jürgen?
Jürgen was there. I'll surprise you. Best footballer, yeah.
Yeah, Darren Anderson.
Vinny Samways.
Really? That is interesting.
Vinny was an unbelievable footballer. An unbelievable footballer. I cannot tell you how good a footballer he was. And everything used to be said that, you know, Spurs didn't like homegrown players, etc., etc. Vinny took quite a lot of stick at certain times. But I never played with a footballer who would be available to receive the ball in any situation on the pitch and still keep coming for it. No matter how bad he was playing, no matter how bad a game he was having. I'm fortunate. I feel blessed to have graced White Hart Lane with some of the players that I have graced with. But you've asked me who the best footballer was, and I'm telling you who's the best footballer.
That season, we had a tough start. We only won 7 of our opening 25 games.
Yeah.
But once you got in the side, you kept your place. Why do you think that season at the start was such a struggle? And in the dynamic between Terry and Doug, who was controlling the training and picking the team and doing the tactics and things?
It was a new team, a young team. Obviously, in the summer, Gazza had left, Lineker had left, Stewart had left, and Terry decided to be bold and went with some young players. I mean, I was 22. I think Shaggy was 20, 21. Ted would have been about 24, 25. Razor would have been about 24. So it was new. It was something new. It was a new team, and you know, there was plenty to be worked on, but the potential was there. You know, Darren didn't have a great first 3-4 months, but you know, was playing with a hernia, and you know, I think it was just a bedding in period for people. But you could feel the potential, and you could feel the potential in training, and you could feel the camaraderie and the team spirit growing also on a daily basis. Regards to, I think that on a day-to-day basis, Dougie and Clem were sort of in charge of the group, but, you know, you always felt that Terry was the boss. There was only one boss there, do you know what I mean? He was calling the shots for me. Don't mean that in a horrible way, but, you know, tactically and training-wise, he was unbelievable, you know?
Dean, an upturn of sorts at the end of that season, which began at Palace and then saw us beat Southampton with a goal rush. 4 goals in 4 minutes and 48 seconds. That's not quite what you would expect to see in professional football. And it must be quite surreal being on the pitch when those flurry of goals are going in. What was that like for you?
We had some games. I think we got to a stage in, I don't know what our record was in the second half of the season, but I think once we beat Norwich away in the FA Cup, I think that the team, and then obviously young Nicky Barmby's come into the team as well. There just seemed that there was I'm not going to say invincibility, but there was a confidence. The team had a confidence in each other that we felt that we could beat anybody. So even when we was in bad periods of games, we knew that we had the players, we had the firepower, that if we found our groove, we felt that we could blow any team away.
And we actually won 9 of the remaining 17 games that season. But there were still times when we could be all over the place. We famously lost 6-0 at Sheffield United and 6-2 at Anfield. So, as you say, there was still that bit of inconsistency there, wasn't there?
Well, I think that the Sheffield United game was the game before the FA Cup semi-final. I think that we, our eye definitely was already on the weekend. Such was the magnitude of the game because we were playing against the other lot down the road. And the Liverpool game was the last game of the season. I weren't playing in that, Jase, mate, just so you know.
No, I didn't know that when I was doing the research. I thought Dino didn't play that day, but
no. Dean, we had a good cut run that season, including the famous 4-2 away win at Man City, a dramatic game with pitch invasions and quite a superb performance by Naeem and a wonderful goal against us by Terry Phelan. Is it true Terry was actually advised to miss a penalty in that game?
Flipping out. I've never heard that, Rick. And I tell you what, I'd have smacked him on if I thought that he was doing that. And I know that he wouldn't do it anyway. But I don't know that. Was that because of the crowd trouble and all that?
I think so. I think that was a suggestion that a referee was, you know, so close to the end of the game, he thought it'd be better if Tottenham missed the penalty. Because, as you know, there was a few pitch invasions that day.
Well, obviously, I can't swear it, but I'll be telling the referee to do one.
Just so you know, Dean, you can say what you want on here. Don't worry about it. That is fascinating.
Now, of course, we lost that awful semi-final to that lot from down the road or south of the river, wherever you want to put them. But of course, we did win at Highbury in the final league game of that season for us, which actually, till 2010, was their last win there. And of course, it was an unlikely goal scoring hero that night.
John Hendry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He got two, didn't he, on that night?
Yeah. It was another one that he was a great lad, you know what I mean? But it was tough time. He was competing with some some top players at that time, you know. Mm. But I remember because Jukebox was injured because he'd had an operation on his groin, I think. And I think Barnes had just had his shin splints done, so that got John Hendry his opportunity at the end of that season.
Yeah, yeah. And we finished eighth that year. But, you know, for modern-day football fans, Aston Villa were second, Norwich were third, Blackburn were fourth, QPR were fifth, Sheffield Wednesday were seventh. And
yeah, we beat Norwich three times that year.
That's right, yeah. Different game now.
Absolutely.
And then also, support wasn't great at that stage either for our 21 home league games. We had less than 30,000 for 12 of them. How difficult and different to what you'd expected was that to play in front of quite an apathetic crowd at the time for you?
Never really affected me, to be honest with you. I felt that, you know, as time went on, I thought that the crowds were always quite big and what have you, you know. I think for me, my first year was a little bit of a blur.
Dean, you mentioned this man already, one of your favourites. Ozzy took over that summer as fans hoped for a return to the glamorous football. But that season, after a decent start, soon turned for the worst, both for the team and sadly for you. Tell us about that and how that was for you to play under one of your heroes in Ozzy Ardiles.
Obviously, it was a difficult time for the club because there was obviously a court case regards to Sir Alan and Terry going on. And obviously, Terry left in acrimonious circumstances. I think that it was a big thing for the boys. The boys were really gutted. The boys were really, we felt that we was on the cusp of something special. And we was hearing about a few of the players that we potentially might be signing and what have you. And we really thought that, we really felt that this was going to take us to the next level, really, because we had finished the season strong and what have you. So I think that that was a disappointment. And then obviously, but that's going on in the summer. And then obviously a couple of weeks before we were due to come back, Ozzy's appointed. So, you know, Ozzy had had two successful periods, one at Newcastle, one at Swindon. West Brom obviously had done well there. His team's played very good football. They were very offensive. So, you know, I think that for me, it's a bit awe-inspiring for me, I think, the first time I met Ozzy, because it was like, crikey, I'm meeting Ozzy Ardiles. Not only was I meeting Ozzy Ardiles, but I was coming into work with him every day. So it was, a bit overwhelming probably to start off with. You know, I was pretty humble. I just wanted to play and wanted to improve. And, you know, again, I could have left in that summer. But, you know, Spurs my club, and I wanted to play for my club as long as I possibly could. We had a really good start. We was in the top three, I think, in them first sort of 10 games. We had a really, really good start. I remember that we won a lot of games. And, we was playing at home to Oldham. And I was having a bit of a war of words with Mark Brennan, who was playing for Oldham. And we were winning the game easy. I mean, we were winning 4-1 at the time. Anyway, I'd got it in my head that I wanted to whack him one. And as a ball came into him, and I've tried to meet at the same time as the ball arrived to him, he's flicked the ball round the corner, and as I've gone to turn, my studs have got stuck in the ground, and I've kicked him up in the air, but his whole weight's come down on top of me, on top of my leg, and I just heard it crack straight away. I knew immediately that I'd done something quite bad.
As the season developed and we got embroiled at the wrong end of the table, we end up that season on the penultimate day going to Oldham for an absolutely massive relegation clash. And if people think we've had big games since, I tell you, that was the biggest Premier League game for me that we've had at that time. And if we lose that game, we're into the bottom three going into the last day. But fortunately, we win at Oldham. But what's your memories of the build-up to that match and the pressure and the tension that was around the club?
I don't know exactly, but I know that when I come back into the team in February time, I sat on the bench for about 12, 13 games straight, I think. Ozzy obviously signed David Kerslake. Dave Kerslake was a player that he'd had before at Swindon who he really liked. So I knew it was going to potentially be quite difficult for me. I got back in the team, but by the time I got back in the team, we were floundering down the wrong end, that was for sure. I remember being in the team, playing a bit, and then not being in the team for a bit. And then we get towards the end of the season, and I get back in the team. And I remember we played Oldham, I think that game was on a Thursday night, Jason, I think. And we were playing Thursday, Saturday.
That's right.
The last two games. And I remember us being up at Oldham, and there was an incredible amount of tension in the around the hotel, around the dressing room before, but a determination still. And obviously the pitch was absolutely shocking. And but we played quite well on the night, and we fully deserved it. Obviously we didn't tuck the second one away until quite late, but it was a result that was well deserved, and obviously that meant that we was going to stay in the Premier League.
It was one of your favourite players that scored as well, wasn't it? Vinny got the first that night, and then David Howes put it to bed. But I think that's the night that we sent Oldham down rather than us, the two teams, you know, changing positions in the table. A remarkable summer follows, and if people now think we have it dramatic during transfer windows, this was a summer from hell. That starts on the 12th of May when the FA charged Spurs with misconduct for irregular payments several years earlier. The FA even announced at the time that should Spurs be demoted from the Premier League, that other teams, I forget who the other team was going to come up. Then on the 15th of June, when Spurs were found guilty, the FA punishment was a 12 points deduction and we were thrown out of the FA Cup. Can you remember your reaction at the time and just the general mood of the players thinking the next season for us is just a hell of a nightmare, bearing in mind we've only just avoided relegation anyway?
Yeah, I think that, you know, you see it unravel in the summer. But I think we went back pre-season. And if I remember right, I think Sir Alan come to the training ground and just sort of said, listen, I'm not going to let this go lying down. I'm fighting this all the way because this is wrong. So you just concentrate on your job and I'll concentrate on this part and I'll get this sorted. So I just think that players then just went, right, okay, so we've got to get about our business and let's get to work. We've got to get fit. We've got to get ready. We've got a big season. And we've got to be ready to go.
And you're right. The club actually appealed at that stage. And upon appeal, just before the start of the season, the points deduction was reduced to 6. But at that stage, the FA Cup ban was still in place and we were definitely weren't going to be in the FA Cup. So, like I say, for people to get stressed over a transfer window, that's what a stressful summer that is.
Yeah, absolutely. As players, you have a job to do. So you know what you've got to do. You've got to get on with it. I think it's worse for the supporters, to be honest with you.
The mood of the summer, Dean, changed for a few weeks later when we signed Romanian World Cup star like Dimitrescu. and then 2 days later, the announcement of Klinsmann. That must have given the belief the deduction could still see relegation avoided. And the early wins even really reinforced that, didn't they, for you?
Obviously, to have someone like Jürgen Klinsmann come in the dressing room and, you know, what a guy he was, you know, incredibly humble, very, very modest, just a normal fella, not affected by the razzmatazz that was going on around him. I remember, I think we played a pre-season friendly on his first game, it was away at Watford. And kind of the crowds and that were there to greet us when we got there. And it was a lot of optimism. There was a lot of optimism once the players started coming in and Illy came in. And, you know, Illy would be up there as, you know, Jace, when I talk about footballers, you know, I said about Vinny, but Vinny as a footballer, but all round his attitude, his work rate, this guy, Dimitrescu, was every bit as good as Vinny. But he didn't have the work rate. You know, he was a special talent. And I know that as Spurs fans, we love our special talents. But you've got to have a little bit more than talent. You know, if you're going to... you've got to be a little bit proactive when the team hasn't got the ball.
And Dean, also, Gica Popescu then joined in early September. Were those players pre-internet days aware of the point deduction when they signed? And if not, how soon did the players mention it when they arrived at the club?
No, I don't think so. I mean, to be fair, you wouldn't get a word out of Illy or Chica. Neither of them could speak a word of English when they come in. So it was, Jürgen spoke perfect English. But, you know, those players obviously come, you know, the Premier League was the biggest league in the world, and you know, Tottenham was still seen as one of the big six in the Premier League. You know, so you know, with no disrespect to the likes of Norwiches and what have you that had finished higher the year before or whatever, you know, come on, Spurs is a bit bigger club than that.
Mm. Jürgen hit the ground running, 12 goals in his first 14 games, but Ozzy's reign soon unravelled and we lost 5-2 at Manchester City and were then humiliated 3-0 in the League Cup at Notts County. Ozzy sacked and we won just two of our opening 12 games then. Payman, who'd done a really good job at QPR. What did you make of his appointment at the time and what differences did Jerry make? Because he certainly did away with Ozzy's 2-3-5 formation, that's for sure.
I probably have to speak that, or to add that I never played. I never played in the beginning of that season. A really good pre-season, to be honest with you. And I think Justin was struggling with a knee. I think he'd had a knee operation and played every game pre-season. I was playing right back. He played Dave Kerslake left back. Justin came back into the training group the week leading up to the first game at Sheffield Wednesday. And then 2 days before the season started, Ozzy called me in to tell me that I wasn't going to be playing and that I wasn't going to be in the squad the weekend, which I didn't take too well, to be honest with you.
Following on from that, this season picked up. We won 7 of our following 10 league games. Alan Sugar won our appeal. And it was decided there would be no points deductions and our FA Cup place would be reinstated. And the season must have finally felt like it was about to take off.
You know, obviously we'd had our struggles. We'd had our struggles under Ozzy. And obviously Sir Alan decided that he needed to make a change and that change was going to be Jerry. We knew one or two of the lads from QPR. They'd said that he was a very good coach and, you know, one of the first things that he'd do is look to make us a little bit more solid at the back. And that was exactly what he did do. To be fair, I was fortunate. I got back in the team immediately. I didn't play the first game. But he did speak to me about that. We lost to Aston Villa 4-3. But then the following Wednesday, I think we was playing Chelsea at home. We drew 0-0. I think from there, I think we had six successive clean sheets, I think, off the back of that. And we started winning some football matches. So, of course, when you start winning football matches, the morale grows again and people become happier around the place, you know.
As that season wear on, the new manager bounce disappears in the league, at least. But a fantastic cup run, having been allowed back into the cup, starts. You played in a memorable game down at Southampton, Ronnie's game. Just what a turnaround that was. And it was all as surprised as us fans just how Ronnie came on and completely turned that game.
To be fair, Ron was one of those players. I don't want to be disrespectful towards Ron, but Ron on his day was a well-beater. He was a well-beater. He could do anything on a day. On another day, like, he could be an egg beater. But he was Ron was a good player. It wasn't so surprising, to be fair. I mean, to be fair, after 25 minutes, we were down and out. We were really 2-0. They started really quick. We never got out of the blocks. I remember getting absolutely hammered at half-time by Jerry because I gave away a penalty. But to be fair, that never bothered me, to be fair. That I needed a bit of that from time to time. I didn't mind that, getting a bit off the manager. You know, it made me liven my game up a little bit, you know. But we grew back into the game and we gradually got back in it. And then we got one. And once we got one, really, I think that we were confident enough to feel that we would go on then and progress in the competition, obviously, although it was by extra time in the end.
Yeah, it wasn't just a hat-trick. It was just the quality of the goals that night. I think all three make it onto that.
Just sensational.
Goal of the month.
Yeah, just absolute sensational strikes, all of them.
Yeah.
All in different ways. And, you know, the first one, I think, is at the near post to take it like on the half volley to hook it back round. You know, the second one when he's running down the left hand on an inside left channel and striking it and it going away from the goalkeeper the other way. And then the final one, obviously, is when he cut inside and before the goalkeeper could even get a sniff, it was in the back of the net and coming back out.
Yeah, fantastic. And then we go on to a quarter final at Anfield where we come from behind to win. And it's not often we win at Anfield. Teddy and Jürgen with a double. As an individual match in your time at Spurs, was that the biggest, the best win? And then was the lowest point, the semi-final that immediately followed?
I get asked this a little bit. People ask me if I had a choice of 3 days that I could relive in my career, what would they be? The day at Liverpool would probably be, well, it would be in the top two. 100% it'd be in the top two.
What's the other two now, Dean? You can't leave us hanging. What would be the other two out of interest?
I think for me, in 97, playing away to Man United in the FA Cup, I had been riddled with injuries. Absolute, you know, to be fair, my career was, from the age of 24, really was decimated with injuries. People don't understand quite how bad my injuries were, but I managed to get back. And in 97, we played in the FA Cup with a decimated team at Old Trafford. I felt it was such a big day for me because I'd been out of the team for a long time because of the injuries, to actually come back in such an occasion. We lost the game, but I played okay and just feeling alive again. Because I had the shirt on and was playing in an arena like Old Trafford. I would have said the semi-final that we lost to Arsenal, but from a point of view that it was the first time that I played at Wembley and it was the biggest game of my life.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
But after beating Liverpool, I think we all have a lot of disappointments in our careers and our lives and what have you, and whatever paths we go down. That is the semi-final away to Everton, probably the biggest disappointment of my life. It was
It was really, really hard to show. I mean, we played on the Tuesday night after, I think we played Man City at home. We won 1-0, but we really needed it. We needed the game because we knew that we'd let ourselves down badly on the Sunday in the semi-final v Everton. Anything and everything that could go wrong kind of went wrong. Do you know what I mean? In the build-up, we lost 3 left-backs in the build-up to the game, and you know, Justin got injured, Sol got injured, then David Kerslake got injured. We just lost 3 left-backs, and it was just so many things that, you know, I remember poor Stewie Nevercott played left-back that day, and, you know, out of position and playing against someone like Limpar. And after the game, I was kind of thinking, should I have gone to Jerry? Because I played there under Ozzie a couple of times. Should I have gone to Jerry and sacrificed myself for the team? Because like, I might have been able to help a bit more, and Stewie might have been a bit more relaxed on the right-hand side playing right back. All these things, all these emotions, because, you know, I've always been one of them type of people that I'll always sacrifice myself for their team. The team's far more important than me or any individual. But I just feel that the anti-climax, the build-up, we were talked up that our name was on the cup because we had not been in at the start of it, and Sir Alan had got us back in, etc., etc. But it's probably the biggest disappointment of my career, without a doubt.
Yeah, we've had Darren Anderson on, and we had David Hales the other day, and both of those two say that the lowest day they've had things. That horrible, wasn't it? You go to Ellen Road, and whilst it's a 50-50 split in the crowd, we feel like the away team because 3 sides of the ground is full of Everton fans. And we got that huge terrace that is miles from the pitch, and it just yeah. That summed the day up, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I think it was actually, not that you overthink it, but when you come out in the warm-up and you think, hold on a minute, why have we only got 1 side here and they've got 3? You know, it is a little bit one of those situations. I mean, to be fair, the game shouldn't have been at Ellen Road anyway. It's supposed to be a neutral ground. It should have been at Villa Park, really, just shouldn't it, you know?
Yeah.
It was just one of them days. I remember Darren was struggling with a bad injury, leading up a ligament injury in his knee, and probably shouldn't have played. He was strapped up from ankle to his groin, and you know, it's just one of those things. But I've got to say, I never spoke to anyone for 2 days. I was, to be fair, it was a result. I was getting the divorce anyway, so I didn't have to speak to the wife. So that was that was one good thing. I remember not speaking to my parents for a couple of days. They were ringing me and see if I was all right, etc. etc. I just, just so disappointed.
Yeah.
Dean, that summer we of course lost both Jürgen and strangely Nick Barmby as well. But looking back, if you could pick one striker, who would you pick for you, Teddy or Jürgen?
Well, they're different type of strikers.
I'm being really cheeky, Dean, asking you just one.
But all I will say that it shows how great both of them were, because you could put them with different partners and they would still be as great with another partner. I'm gonna say Ted. His all round game. His all round game. You know, Ted was an out and out target man when he first came to the club. Out and out target man, goal scorer, and Nicky Barmby, for example. So he played with Jukebox, who was like pace and power, and then he played with Nicky Barmby, who was like a number 10 floating player. When Jürgen came, Teddy had to reverse his role. Teddy became the number 10 and Jürgen became the striking partner.
Yeah.
You know, Ted was, you know, for someone who had no pace whatsoever And I used to take the piss out of him all the time about how slow he was. His ability to read the game, to see passes, to be able to play passes. If you go through his montage of goals, you'll see all types of goals in there. Yep. But none where he's trying to lever the arse off the ball. Everything was guided. Left foot, right foot, header, chips. I mean, you know, I've got a thing that's saved on the top of my Twitter account from probably one of the greatest goals that I saw Ted score, which was us celebrating away to Coventry when Ted scored the half volley chip.
Yeah, people remember Glenn's chip at Watford, is right up there, but Teddy's one, that's a wonderful finish, isn't it, at Coventry?
Yeah. Ted developed, you know, he developed his game in so many different ways, you know, and his finishing was sublime. You know, what I say about Jürgen, if Jürgen got a sniff of the goal, you would turn around and walk back the halfway line because he weren't missing.
The following season was really up and down. We'd no wins in the first four. Then we win four straight games. Then go three without a win. Then we win three in a row. But as the season wore on, we'd have all kind of tailed off. Despite Teddy and Chris Armstrong, who'd come in to replace Jürgen, formed a decent partnership. But the standout game that season, of course, was New Year's Day and the thrashing of Fergie's Man United.
That's another day. If I could relive, probably that would be there as well.
Astonishing win that was, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I remember that year. I mean, I to be honest, I was really, really struggling at this point. I think I'd had two or three knee operations in very, very quick succession. And it was at a time where we had so many injuries at the club. It was quite frightening, really.
That was like today, mate.
Well, if I remember right, on that day, our team. I'm gonna try and name our team. Have you got it there, Jase? Right.
Yeah, no, I've got it.
Right, so it'd be Walks in goal.
Walks is in goal, yep.
Me right back.
That's right.
Colin Calderwood.
Colin Calderwood played, yep.
Stewie Nethercott.
Did Nethercott play? Yes, he did.
Justin
played, yep.
Right, and then I've got it. Ronnie Rosenthal
played, yep.
Joel Campbell, Darren Caskey.
We don't mention one of those, mate.
No, all right, okay.
But Darren Caskey's Darren Caskey's in the side.
Ili Dumitrescu.
That's right.
Teddy and Chris Armstrong.
That's right. And who came on as a sub?
That's huh? Brilliant. Fantastic.
Who came on as a sub?
Yep.
Whoa.
Come on, Jase, you're killing the man.
Position?
McMahon came on.
Oh, Gerard McMahon.
Gerard McMahon, that's it. He came on as a sub.
Yes, a memorable game.
Yep, that's for sure. Well done on that. That shows you how good the memory is.
Yeah, the Alzheimer's ain't quite kicked in yet, mate, but it is getting there.
It's incredible going that far back. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
You missed the last few games of that season with another knee injury, which then just developed over the summer, didn't it, into a tale of several operations.
Yeah, I had about... I had six operations, I think, in about 15 months. Three on the left knee and then three on the right knee.
What was that, ligaments or...?
The FA Cup season, the 95 season, we were playing away to Newcastle right at the end of the season. Week before the end of the season, that be about right?
I think Newcastle was the last game of the season. That's right.
3-3?
No, we had Leeds away and Newcastle away was a 1-1. Jason Dazelle scoring.
Right. Well, in the year that I'd done my knee, we drew 3-3 with Newcastle away on a Wednesday evening. The day before the game, I was just doing some extra work after training, like I always did, and I felt this crack in my knee. I went to chip a ball down the line with my left foot, and I heard this crack and thought, woof. Didn't really think anything of it. Come in, spoke to the physio. I says, oh, time to show off. Felt something with my knee, but there's no swelling there. Anyway, put some ice on it. Woke up, gave me some anti-inflammatories. The following day, I got up and I thought, don't quite feel right this, but bollocks, I'm playing. I'm not going to not play. I want to play, and I'm going to play. So, again, took anti-inflammatories and this, that, and the other. Played the game. Within half an hour of the game, I thought, I'm in trouble here. I'm in massive trouble. I'm not sure I'm going to get through this. Anyway, I did get through it. The following day, I couldn't walk, couldn't get out of bed. Well, could get out of bed, but I couldn't walk. I couldn't bend my knee. My knee was locked up. Drove into the ground. Obviously, right, okay, Dean, we need to get you in for a scan. Got me in for a scan. Torn cartilage. So that was the first one. It was a torn cartilage, torn meniscus. The following season, come back, wasn't right. Could still, my knee weren't right and rehab wasn't great. And I then felt it again. So again, got a scan. There's another tear. So go back in again. Then the last time I'd done it was at home to Wolves in the FA Cup. We actually went away and won in the replay. And a player ran into me, and it was a big lad, Neil Emblem. It was like running into a truck. Run straight into the side of my knee, and I was like, oh, my God. And the fluid was unbelievable. I played the rest of the game. The replay was on a Wednesday night. I probably shouldn't have played, but I took the anti-inflammatories and what have you. Never said anything, carried on, played the game, won the game. Got another week down the line, I think it was, and I thought, no, I've got to see something about this knee. It's just isn't right. So then got another scan. Yeah, there's another tear in the cartilage. We was playing, it was the famous game at Notts Forest in the FA Cup when we come home. The game was cancelled after 15 minutes because of the snow.
That's right, yep.
I was having the operation the following day. So basically I was playing that game and then going straight to hospital to have the operation. Went and had the operation, played 2 weeks after, but wasn't right. I played 2 weeks after the operation on a meniscus, which is ridiculous really, but just it was how keen I was to play and play for the team.
Dean, you mentioned that those injuries there, I mean, they lasted well into your fifth and as it turned out to be your final season, not starting a game until February, but you did keep your place in the side for the rest of that season until the final day. But that summer you did move on to Crystal Palace.
No, I didn't move. At the end of my contract, I'd never moved. I was in between at that point, I didn't move because what happened was that the following year, I tore my right meniscus. Well, I severed my meniscus in three in a pre-season game in Norway.
Blimey.
And that was Jerry's last little bit. And then Christian Gross came in after that. But I severed my cartilage in three. I was out of contract. The club agreed to keep paying me because I got injured playing for them. I come back at operation. It got messed up. I went back under the knife again 4 weeks after. Come back, started rehabbing again, and it still weren't right. And I then changed surgeons, and they discovered that my meniscus was severed in three. See, what I had done, I had
crazy.
A third of the meniscus taken away, and the other two-thirds of it was stapled back together with staples, believe it or not.
Out of interest, Dean, when this is all going on, I mean, because we had Darren on a couple of weeks ago, was there any kind of criticalness from you to the club in terms of the medical staff there at the time, in terms of...
Yeah, loads.
Yeah,
loads.
I mean, because that seems to be the alarming thing we find from a lot of players we speak to during this era of injuries. The lack of clear clarity there was from the medical staff at that time?
Yeah, to be fair, there was... it's not... Listen, was talking candidly now. I'm not crying and
no, of course not. No,
feel sorry for me. This,
no,
I'm
no,
proud
no.
of. Yep. I'm proud of my career and what have you. But
yep.
at the end of the day, I wouldn't probably be in the state that I'm in today if I'd got the proper medical attention. I mean, I've got arthritis in both my knees. I need half a new knee on my left knee now. Like, it's ready to be done now, but I won't have it done because I feel that I'm too young.
Yep.
But if we had had the proper medical attention in that period, then, you know, there's an opportunity that we might not be having this conversation now. I might not be in the position that I am physically that I'm in now.
Okay.
You know, I'm a fit guy. I look after myself. I keep fit. I'm in the gym 4 or 5 times a week because I'm obsessed with being fit.
Yeah.
Same as I was when I was a player. But it's being fit and trying to stay fit and trying to be fit, you know. And at the end of the day, you need to make sure that you're being looked after medically, and you would expect to.
Of course.
At a club.
Of course. Two questions in one, Ed, then, Dean, for you. When did you know your time at Spurs was up? And then two, do you have any regrets having joined the club you supported? Those 5 years were pretty much a real struggle with a few top quality players, plenty of misfits like, you know, Jason Cundy, Jason DeSalle, etc. Any regrets? And, you know, when did you actually know your time at Spurs was ultimately up?
End of the season in 95. I knew I was done. My left knee was deteriorating badly, and I just could not physically do, and I wasn't 25 then. I should have had at least another 5-6 years at my before, or at least another five years of prime playing time, really, at the top level, at the level that I felt that I should be playing at. But the legs had gone, and once you have injuries like that, and all of a sudden you can feel that you've lost a yard of pace, that then becomes very, very difficult.
One answer, one quick answer on this for you, Dean. Any regrets? But any regrets for you?
None whatsoever. None whatsoever as in regards to what are you talking about, my time and how long I stayed at Spurs and what I did and playing with injuries, etc., etc.
Yeah, etc. Over that time, many regrets. That's good
None.
To hear. That's good
None.
To hear.
I put my body on the line every single time.
Mm.
Players don't now.
No.
I've got to be honest with you. They are... Well, I want to choose my words carefully, but I don't think you can. I think to a certain extent, they'll all have little niggles and little things and this, that and the other, but I don't like this. There are players at Spurs that I know that have injuries, and they will go through the wall. But
is it a case, Dean, of kind of different time, different generation? Do you think that's what it is now, the way football's changed on that aspect of things?
A little bit, but I think it comes from the personality. I think that if you go through the Spurs boys now, if you were talking about Spurs boys now, I think the ones that it means, and I don't mean this detrimentally, but I think that when you've been a supporter of a club, I do think that the success tastes a bit sweeter. And I do think that they probably, without speaking out of turn, but they when they players that are homegrown and they genuinely have come through the ranks and they've been fans, I think it means a bit more to those boys. Yeah, for example, Winks had a terrible injury 18 months ago, 2 years ago. Horrific ankle injury that he got at Burnley. You know, but he wants to put himself out there. Wants to play. He's got a problem with his ankle, but he's desperate to play. Kane's probably the same. You know, would play as much as he can. Like he's obviously been rushed back from his ankles and what have you before when he's done the ankle. Obviously, the injury he's got at the minute, he can't rush from it. You know, he's had a ruptured hamstring. Do you know what I mean? He can't rush back from that. But those joint injuries and what have you, them types of players, you know, they should be appreciated by our club and by the fans. because they genuinely love the club. But that's my opinion.
No, I quite agree, mate. I mean, we've had the famous conversations many times where people say Danny Rose gets it, and I always think Harry Winks gets it. Nobody ever says it about him, and he just gets constant, a bit like Vinny Stanway, constant criticism now for passing it sideways and backwards and things. But you're right, Harry Winks is always available to receive the ball.
The thing is that the game now has changed. You know, from the point of view now, it's a bit different, I think, now over under Jose. I think the team's is a bit more pragmatic. It's obviously had a lot of injuries, so it's trying to make sure that we don't give anything away rather than being free-flowing. But when that team's free-flowing, and I was at Watford, and we played Spurs in October, and I was speaking to one or two of the boys after the game, one or two of the Spurs boys. This is just following on, Jason, what you're saying about the criticism of Winks or whatever and that type of player or Soundways or whatever. When you're playing against a team that's playing in a low block with 10 men behind the ball, playing inside probably 40 metres across the pitch, 30 metres in the length of the pitch, that is very, very... That is not easy to break down teams like that. And the longer the game goes, where Spurs haven't scored, the harder it becomes. You know, the obviously the first thing you want to try and do, I think we'll all agree with this, we want to see Spurs come out of the traps, first 15, 20 minutes, high press, very, very high intensity, you know, using our quality, trying to get that early goal. Because if you get that early goal, teams then have to come out. Teams can't sit back. But the longer the game is 0-0, or if it goes a 1-0, it becomes a lot harder for Spurs.
I'm glad you kind of brought it onto this, to be honest with you, Dean, because we want to talk quickly about the present day before we wrap up. So tell us then for you, I mean, what's the feeling like now looking at, I know this season you can't really explain and try and come to terms with how this season has gone in terms of this COVID-19 crisis we're in, but talk us through your feelings in terms of, very quickly, the Pochettino sacking, Jose Mourinho's appointment, and the struggles we've had as a club this season watching Spurs, as you were, as you're a fan of the club still. So what's that like, kind of that period of losing Poch, appointing Mourinho? What was your feelings around all that?
When you was with Watford that day, could you already see how Tottenham had completely changed, that we weren't quite high pressing, and could you sense that, hold on, this is a side that's really struggling here?
For me, there's I have opinions on teams, on clubs. Alex Ferguson was always brilliant at building teams within teams. Even when he had a successful team, he would still be building his next team. So, you know, for example, he had Pallister and Bruce was his centre-half partnerships. As he's getting them to the end, or Bruce is coming to the end, he then goes for Jaap Stam and Ronny Jonsson, for example.
Yeah.
Jaap Stam's there. He has a falling out with Jaap Stam. He's already signed Ferdinand. Then signed Ferdinand. He's got Sylvester. I think that what Maurizio done for Spurs was absolutely incredible. Now, we have a situation, and it's nobody's fault. This can't be helped. This is just the way it goes. It's no one's fault. Got a guy who's doing an unbelievable job. But we're led to believe that there's a lack of funds because don't get me wrong. We've got a great team. We had a great team, a great group of players that were at the height of their powers at that time.
And only one or two away, Dean, you probably argue. One or two maybe players away from really adding to that group and pushing up.
Yeah, and it might not even be one or two players away. It might be a bit of luck within a 90-minute game
yep.
away. You know, when we are talking world-class level elite sport where the margins are so tight. The ball, you know, I went to Northampton Town, was manager in Northampton Town. Someone who lives me forever. And he's a great friend of mine. He's acted as a mentor for me for 10 years, David Pleat. And David Pleat sent me a message on the first game of the season and says, Dean, I wish you the very best. I hope the ball run kindly for you. Everyone needs it.
Mm.
Now, I think that the circumstances, I think that Maurizio done an unbelievable job. And I think that he was unfortunate with the timings of things. So, obviously, White Hart Lane being knocked down, building the new stadium, having to go and play at Wembley. Are the funds available? Were the funds available? Were the funds not available for him to be able to add to the squad? We're led to believe no. I'm not sure whether there was or whether there wasn't. But when you have a team that has done well, and then you've done really well, but you obviously to get to the Champions, to go in the Champions League every year for 4 years, 3 or 4 years, whatever it was, is no mean feat anyway. But then you just need that extra step where you need to win a trophy, and they couldn't quite do it, and you're thinking, right, could they sign a couple of players here, a couple of players there? But then when you're thinking that they actually need a couple of players, they actually get to the final of the biggest competition in the world.
Mm. And then we have a referee that gives a penalty that, to this, I think will live longer for us and say, oh, that's not a penalty. And that's where it changes, isn't it? That first minute, or what, 25 seconds in, and from that moment on, it's you know, that's derailed the club, that penalty ever since.
I mean, listen, the way the football, the way the game is now, the game, when you work in the game, and you're working at professional level, as a coach or a manager, you're waiting to get the sack.
It's sad, isn't it? I mean, that is so sad you say that. But I mean,
but unfortunately, it's the reality. We are in a results-based game.
Mm. On that then, Dean, results-based game. Tell us then, Jose Mourinho, just to finish up on what's been a great show having you on, what does a future hold for Spurs under Jose Mourinho? Tell us.
Well, I think there'll be some changes in the summer. I don't think that he... Well, I don't believe that he would have come in and put his reputation in. The guy's a serial winner. I don't think he would come into Spurs without having some kind of assurances that he's going to be able to get some players in regards to the summer.
And how important for you, Dean, also, very quickly, just so you go on this point, how important is the style? Because Jason, bless him, Jason, we had Jason for 3 or 4 years on our show up until this one, where Jason kind of came out of retirement for us in the last couple of weeks because of the style of football under Mourinho. He found it very difficult to watch it. So for you, you spoke earlier about the way you used to know Spurs would play that kind of high-press game. With that not being there so much under Mourinho now, how is that like to watch as a supporter when you associate Tottenham with being a flair side going forward? Even in your time at the club, we still had those flair players. What is it like now watching Tottenham?
Let's not beat around the bush. It's not been particularly enjoyable, is it? But there's circumstances behind that. In the last sort of four or five months, the team's been decimated by injuries, especially in the offensive part of the pitch. You know, I think that, look, we want to compete, and I believe that we can compete 100%. I think that what people can accept is that your tactics when you play against Manchester City are going to be different from, with no disrespect to this football club, but would be different. No one would doubt that the tactics would be different playing against Man City to what they would when you're playing Norwich. But I think people will expect that when we're playing against those teams, people expect that with the array of talent that we have, we'd be expected to come out firing all cylinders and blow these teams away. Now, there's no easy games in the Premier League because of the way teams are setting up now. But you've got to have, in the majority of those games, you've got to relentlessly, we need to relentlessly be on the front foot so that we put so much pressure on these teams that, you know, we'll win these games. They've still got some great players, you know.
Yes, that's my point, mate. And, you know, when I saw us 1-0 up at home to Norwich in a cup tie, we were in the bottom three, and we, like I said, 1-0 up with 15 minutes, and then we try and sit on that. And I'm thinking, hold on, it is Norwich City. We're at home. Sorry, I don't want to see Tottenham become Bolton Wanderers in its approach to a game. I just can't have it.
I understand. You know, I think that when you, I watched Spurs quite a bit beginning of the season, early on in the season especially.
That Watford game, what was the one area Watford said, that's how you're going to get at Tottenham? Was it not being funny? Was it having a look at Oreo? Was it, I think Danny Rose is at left back on the day. Did you think fullbacks, you can really get them there?
Without the ball, we said that we had to close off the middle of the pitch, which is what I was just speaking to you about when we was having this conversation in regards to Winks about, you're saying, oh, he goes sideways and backwards and this. We basically knew how good he was on the ball, and probably short and medium distance passer, he's as good as there is in England. If he's got gaps that he can feather that ball through, he will do that. Our whole thing was, let the fullbacks have it. Let the fullbacks go high, let them get the foot, and then we'll go from there. But we do not let them play through the middle of us.
Mm.
We do not let Son, we do not let Ali, we do not let Kane come off into those half spaces between the lines, between our back four and our midfield, and then be able to thread balls for us in the middle. We knew that we'd have a problem if that happened. And we actually done it fantastically well on the day.
You did.
I think we were lucky not to win the game. I'll be honest with you, Dean, from what I can remember.
To be fair, we had a blatant penalty turned down there, haven't we? With Delafoge just before half time at 1-0.
Yep.
That was probably as big a turning point in the game. That was one of the things that we looked at doing. That was what our whole structure was built off of, what we was going to do without the ball, of how we were going to try and do it without the ball. And with the ball, we knew that we had the running power of Delafeu, Pereira, Decore, we felt that we could exploit the spaces that the fullbacks left behind, especially the right fullback.
Yeah.
Especially the right fullback.
Yeah.
So that was what our game was built. Our game, we knew that we weren't gonna come to Tottenham and dominate possession but that was never our intention. We knew that we weren't going to be able to do that against Tottenham, but we felt that we could hurt them on the counter-attack with the spaces that they left behind.
Yeah, and they did on the day. They did.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I've got to be honest with you. I think that the two styles of the two managers that we're talking about in Maurizio and Jose, I feel are very different. Are very different, and I feel that the players are going to need a period of time of adjustment to that. I think that the most important time for any manager is pre-season, and I know Jose has said as alluded to that in his press conferences before, but the likelihood is that he's probably not going to get that now. He will be planning like you will not believe now. As soon as he can get those players back in regarding this COVID, he's going to want to get them in to be able to do his pre-season. And the pre-season is going to be for the last 9 games of this season and next season as well.
It's crazy though, Dean. Can he moan too much, Dean? He was wishing for the season to end for a good couple of 4 weeks 4 weeks running, he was wishing for the season to end. But you're right. He's absolutely crazy.
Well, he could swap places with me if he wants, because I'd love to be going back to work every single day in an environment at a great club like Spurs. So he can come and swap with me if he wants to. It's very, very important to me to give back to the game that I love. So I still coach. I still coach young kids. I run Valenti Academy for young children from the age of 6 years old up to 16 up in St Albans. Something that I'm very passionate about with some guys that I've got working with me. So it's very important for me. I love the game. I always go back whenever, no matter what job I do is in regards to first team level, I always go back to coach kids in between, because I think it's very rewarding. It's good for the soul. It teaches you to be humble. It teaches you to be patient. But it's just a time really for reflection, and we'll see what comes in the future. You know, it's but obviously I will take the opportunities when I can, when we get back going, to get back down the lane to watch my team play.
To be fair, if this style of football carries on, I think Jace might give you and Kike a call in 6 months. Jace, what do you reckon?
What? All I'm saying, Rick, is I can't see what Jose's doing different to what Sam Allardyce would be doing. That's all I can say at the moment. So that sums it up. But I think just to finish off, you know, Dean's character, I think, is what you have to take and to go through constant injuries and play the 2 years he did. But I think Dean's biggest achievement in football, or the biggest thing in many ways, was actually when he was at Palace. And when Palace were put into administration, an injured player really united that group and played through administration. And it's not surprising that he's actually a bigger legend at Crystal Palace. And I think his period at Palace actually does him more credit than probably what he's remembered for at Tottenham. But I know a few Palace fans, and I tell you, there's not a single person that ever says a bad word about Dean Austin at Crystal Palace. So, you know, full credit to you for that, mate.
Is that how you feel, Dean, for you? Would you say what you achieved at Palace, to some degree, you're more appreciated by there, or do you think by both fans? What do you see yourself as now? I know you're a massive Spurs fan, but that connection with Palace and Spurs, is it very similar?
It's different, because I think that, you know, people ask me about my career, they ask me about my Spurs career, and they ask me, and I said, look, I lived the dream, mate. Don't worry about that. You know, I had a lot of problems. I had a lot of injury problems. I wasn't short of the stick that I received from the fans. That didn't really bother me. I was one of them, and I wanted the best for the club. Year one and year three were brilliant. The rest was a bit of a blur, really. I needed the change. I needed the change not because I wanted to leave Tottenham. The day I left Tottenham, the day I drove out of those gates the last time, I cried my eyes out for 2 days, mate. I will not lie to you. It was very, very, not a very, very nice time for me as a person. But I needed to do it. I needed to move on. I needed to move on because medically it was not very good at the club at the time. So I definitely needed to do it from that point of view. Listen, I signed for Palace originally because of Terry. Terry came in for me. He was a massive influence on my career, as I said, both as a player and as a coach. And he wanted to sign me. You know, the first 6 months at Palace, wasn't a great time for me. I was still struggling with these injuries. I had to find a way. I had to find a way to be able to get through games as it was. I was fit, but I was lacking match fitness. But to be fair, you know, the turning point for me, I think what defined me at Crystal Palace was what Jason just spoke about the administration. Anyone that was earning over £50,000 had to take 60% wage cuts. All the players abandoned the ship, so to speak. And I was the most experienced player left behind, and I said, no, I don't want to go. I don't believe that I've shown people. I don't think people have seen the real Dean Austin. and you're probably never likely to see the real Dean Austin, but I think that you need to see a little bit what Dean Austin's about.
And I think this podcast, Dean, when fans hear this, they'll, I think, again, your character, as Jason said, will really come across. So for me, it's been an honour to have you on. Thank you ever so much. It's been a real pleasure spending this time with you. And again, really, really appreciate it, Dean.
No, it's, guys, it's any time. It's been an absolute honour. It's been a pleasure for you to have asked me to come on and speak to you guys.
Top man.
Fantastic to have you on, mate. And I was a bit worried when you was coughing earlier on, especially at the moment. I thought, blimey, don't, you know, get yourself a glass of water. And
I've had this bit of tickling that week, mate, but I'm okay. Don't worry. There's plenty of life in the old dog yet, mate.
With a temperature of about 40 degrees at the same time.
No, right, mate. It's 37, actually. Oh. 37 and a half.
Brilliant. Well, listen, Dean, we wish you all the best for the rest of the season. No, listen, stay well, keep safe, and hopefully we'll see you back in football very, very soon, Dean. I think football needs to see more characters like you, and fingers will see you back very, very soon.
Cheers, chaps. All the best.
How do you look back on your time at Spurs?
The first and the third years I was there, as in my ability to play, were the best years of my life. At the end of that third year, I tore a meniscus in my knee. I ended up having 4 operations, I think, in about 12 months, and my career was over. I didn't realise it at the time. It was the thing that killed me. I was never the same after that.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.